Our next guest for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about continuing with our UK, a look at science in the United Kingdom, another area where the UK is making great strides, and that is developing and implementing renewable energy sources. The UK signed on to the Kyoto Protocol, which went into effect earlier this year, and it has set a goal of reducing carbon dioxide emissions there by 60% by the middle of this century. And to help accomplish that, the UK is turning to renewable energy. And by 2020, the goal is to have 20% of electricity generated by renewable energies. And that includes solar, wind, and tidal energy. And the UK's point person of science and technology is Prime Minister Tony Blair's science advisor, Sir David King. He joins us now to talk about how the UK is making the switch to renewables and doing it in a way that doesn't slow the economy. So what lessons can we here on this side of the pond, what can we learn from our neighbors? Could a bigger investment in renewables here in the U.S. help slow our greenhouse gas emissions and about 20% of the world's emissions? Let me introduce my guest. Sir David is a professor of physical chemistry at Cambridge and head of the Office of Science and Technology in London. He joins us from BBC Studios in Cambridge. Good evening and welcome back to the program, Professor King. Good to talk with you again. Tell us about your goal of eliminating greenhouse gases, or at least a certain percentage of them, as much as you can, and by using renewables. Do you have an actual schedule of how these are going to come online?
We do. We have a plan that takes us in stages through 2010, 2020, and then on to 2050. And, of course, we have to keep re-examining how things are going. We're actually due for a review right now. Mm-hmm. I should say, on top of the things you mentioned, Ira, we're also focused on energy efficiency gains. That's critically important because it's a major win-win. It's an economic benefit to the nation, and it's also a great benefit in reducing carbon dioxide emissions. And one of the focuses there is on the built environment. Something like 50% of our emissions comes from the built environment in the UK. And we think over that period of time, we can actually approach halving that.
Really?
So that's an obvious thing to go for. Mm-hmm. We are throwing energy out the windows, literally, at the moment. And we are introducing new building obligations and regulations, which we believe are very friendly to the building industry as well.
Right. We've talked about that. There are some greenhouses and actually green skyscrapers being built in New York now, which try to be as energy efficient as possible. Not enough of them, I don't think.
If you visit London today, you'll see our new Gherkin, which I think we're very proud of on the skyline. And that was a building designed by Foster's to reduce energy usage by roughly half compared with other equivalent buildings. It's also a stunning building to look at.
I will visit it. You know, the President of the United States talks about energy policy, but he always brings up the fact that he thinks that the economy will suffer if we reduce greenhouse gases, and also we'll have to suffer too much if we reduce our consumption or try to become more energy efficient. How do you convince our president to do more of this stuff?
Well, what I'll try and do to persuade your listeners is, first of all, tell you that since 1990, the British economy has grown continuously by about 36% in total, GDP growth. And over that period of time, we have actually reduced our basket of greenhouse gas emissions by about 14%. So we have already demonstrated that we can continue to grow our economy in a very healthy way and at the same time reduce emissions. As we move forward in time, we are now focusing on our renewable energy obligation for electricity onto the grid. Mm-hmm. And this is costing us money. The government is putting in around £500 million or around $1 billion in your terms, between 2002 and 2008 to bring renewable energy technologies onto the grids. And the obligation requires every utility to bring these on, and they are given timelines to meet that obligation.
Mm-hmm. We hear more talk about the resurrection of nuclear power around the world. Is there a nuclear power element or a future in the UK here?
It's a very good question because our nuclear onto the grid is about 27% currently. And if we don't rebuild our rather aging power stations, nuclear power stations, we will be down to 4% on the grid by 2020. That's a massive drop in non-carbon dioxide producing energy. And we're therefore having to look very carefully. Now, I'm pursuing very hard the notion of energy efficiency gains and renewables. And we will continue to do that through this period to 2050. But it may well be that we will need another generation of nuclear fission power stations. It's my belief that we're seeing already a renaissance of nuclear power stations, particularly in the Asian countries. And I believe another generation of nuclear power stations is going to come on board in the West as well.
But you think that is an intermediate phase?
I see it as an intermediate phase because all of our analysis indicates that renewables can come on stream. I know there are a lot of skeptics mm-hmm. on this and cover our energy needs. But I'm also working hard to see that we establish a good fusion power research base so that we can potentially develop fusion power stations into the future.
If we ever get that political football settled about where to build the next fusion power reactor.
That is amazing because I was asked to chair a committee for the European Commission 4 years ago. Our report was headed Fast Track to Fusion Power, and then we couldn't decide where to build the thing. So, Ira, that's where we got stuck.
I believe.
But I'm now putting, I would put good money on us beginning building in November this year.
Oh, really?
I think I see all of the signs of a renewed belief in the European countries and in Japan that we must get this thing sorted. And I'm very confident now that we will be on target to start building in November.
Let's talk about some of the renewable energy technologies that the UK is investing in. And one of them is wind power. And you're well situated to take advantage of that technology, are you not?
We are. And we are putting up wind turbines around the country. We have created through a fund, this Renewables Obligation Fund, an incentive to put up wind turbines. So the offshore wind capital grants are 10% of capital costs. And so far, something like £117 million has gone into that. We have the first two offshore wind farms now online, off the coast of North Wales and off the coast of Norfolk. And two others are at the early stages of construction. And we're going to see something like 1,000 megawatt of wind power coming online over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And what percentage would that be of your energy demand?
That would be a grand total of 1% of UK electricity, mm-hmm. bringing our, and these numbers now look small, bringing our renewables total up from 3% at the moment to 4% in a couple of years. But we are also looking at energy crops. So we have biomass grants, about $66 million going out right now. Energy crop scheme, about $29 million. And we're rather proud of the marine energy developments. The government is currently investing about £50 million into that. And wave and tidal is beginning to look rather good, actually.
Yeah, I've actually seen some interesting drawings on the web of research.
Right. Well, there's some exciting stuff going up off the Scottish Islands where they are developing some really interesting wave power technologies. But I'm also even more excited about the tidal energy systems that are being developed. Around our little island, Ira, we have enough tidal energy to drive all the power we need if we can just learn how to farm it efficiently.
You know, this is. Let me just remind our listeners that I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Sir David King. You know, this is like, to me, almost deja vu all over again, as we say here. Because 30 years ago, after the oil embargo, we were talking about all of these things. Imagine if we had implemented these things 30 years ago, where we would have been today, you know?
I can't agree with you more. There's been 30 years lost on this project. But, you know, there's very little time to lose now.
Right.
I have to say all the signs are that we are going to have to keep that carbon dioxide level in our atmosphere below the 500 part per million mark, and it's rising at 2 parts per million now and sitting at close on 380. So, in 10 years we'll be at 400 parts per million.
Mm-hmm. As an island country, do you think countries have to take seriously now the threats of global warming and begin to plan for possible changes in the climate, for tides, for rising sea levels, things like that?
There's absolutely no question in my mind, and I have pulled together a team to advise the British government on what we should do. We had about 92 scientists and engineers meeting for a period of 2 years. We've produced a report. It's about 700 pages long. It's gone into government. Government has begun to take the actions that we've indicated there. This is all about flood and coastal defense management for the UK. The investment we're putting in that area at the moment is around half £1 billion a year. So again, about $1 billion a year to manage the risks. And we have decided we really have to increase that investment still further. 5 years ago, that was around £200 million a year. So you can see there's already been a substantial increase. One of the facts, if I may come in, is when I was looking at all of this, we collected data on the usage of the Thames barrier across the Thames that stops London from flooding. And the figures are really quite surprising. The Thames barrier was first used in the 1980s. It was used, as expected, about once every 2 or 3 years. We're now using it 6 or 7 times a year, and we only use it to protect us from flooding. Hmm. Now, we believe that this is simply an indication of the impacts that are already happening as a result of the global warming we've experienced to date.
Interesting. 1-800-989-8255 is our number here for phone calls for Sir David King. Catherine in Ohio. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. Good afternoon, gentlemen. This afternoon, I'm a little proud to be British. My question is, I was wondering if there are any plans to encourage decentralization of energy generation and energy production to individual industries, for example, even individual homes. So there will be some autonomy from central power sources and therefore save the country some money.
Hmm. Professor King?
You're asking, of course, a very good question, Catherine. The decentralization saves all of the energy losses down the lines that take energy into homes and factories and so on. Decentralization in some countries has taken off in a very big way in the form of combined heat and power systems, which means that you also benefit from not throwing the heat up the chimney of the power stations. I'm afraid to say Britain at the moment is not doing well, but that means we've got a lot of headroom there. The Danes are the best behaved in the world on this. They have 50% of their energy is from combined heat and power dispersed systems of the kind Catherine would like to see. And it is a very, very important potential saving.
How far away do you think we are from generating power within our own homes?
Generating power in our homes would depend on what is the source of the power that you're going to generate. For example, if you do have methane gas tapped into your home, it is quite possible now to get a methane to hydrogen converter and then run a fuel cell system, for example, that will generate all of your heat and power requirements in the home. But I think in terms of general technology, that is the limiting factor. Mm-hmm. Because methane itself, of course, you're emitting carbon dioxide, so right. it's not ideal.
Sir David, I thank you very much. We've run out of time, but I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us and staying up late Friday evening.
That's my pleasure, Ira. Thank you.
And good luck to you. We'll chat again.
Good. Good.
So David King, Professor of Physical Chemistry at Cambridge University. He's also the Chief Scientific Advisor to His Majesty's Government and the Office of Science, Her Majesty's Government, and the Office of Science and Technology in London. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galek, Ryan Havers, Enrico Cardi in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And with help today from NPR librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Finn. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.